south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, today let's start with an email of concern for everyone on a Plan B who comes down here to live and who is receiving packages from various companies up in the States, Amazon, eBay, Overstock.com, whatever. Then receiving them through one of those mail forwarding services located in Miami. You know, when you start using one of those services, there's always some bugs to be worked out. And of course, governments always want their piece, their taxes, through the aduana or customs. Though, luckily, as you longtime listeners know, I mentioned that most Latin countries have a $200 or $300 tax-free window when you order stuff. In other words, if you order something from Amazon or anywhere that's under $200 or $300, depending on the country, the item never even ends up in customs. It goes straight through from the Miami forwarding box all the way through to that forwarding company's pickup office in whatever country or city you're in. So governments do want their pound of flesh after you've ordered something over $200 or $300, but you can play tricks with them too. For example, the other day I ordered a security camera system from the U.S., you know, the latest and greatest 4K system. Those are 8 megapixel cameras, ultra high definition. Can't get any better than that. The thing is, the security company up in the States is having a huge Black Friday sale, and for 24 hours, everything was half price with free ground shipping. So I bought an 8 camera system, get this, for around $500. Normally a system like that, well over a grand, because it comes with the DVD recorder, all the software, 4 terabyte hard disk. So you can continuously record with those cameras for something like a week or so. And of course, they've got that great app. So wherever you are in the world, you can look at your cameras in real time or check the recording. And that's just great for monitoring a house or a business, you know. So anyway, I ordered this thing and it was $500 and something, which, as you know, is over the $200 tax-free limit in the country I'm in anyway. So naturally, it's going to get stuck in customs and I'm going to have to pay something like a 30% duty. That always seems to be the way it works out. Even when they tell you it's 10 or 15 or 20%, somehow they tack on a lot of junk and you end up paying around 30. It used to happen to me quite a bit, and I say used to happen, but that was then and this is now. There are some hacks to get around that. And in the case of the camera system, it was easy. I just told the guy when I ordered it to put on the shipping invoice that it was $195. And you know what? Sometimes they'll go along with that. But this guy wouldn't because it's a big outfit and he said the warehouse prepares those things and he's got no control over that and they'll send along the correct paid amount on the shipping invoice. Meaning I was SOL, right? Wrong. You got to have a plan B, you know? Sometimes a plan C. And my plan B went something like this. There's 8 cameras, a hard drive, digital recorder, cables and such. I told him, break it into 3 separate orders. First order with 4 cameras, second order the other 4 cameras, and one with the digital recorder, hard drive, and cables. So then I had 3 orders, each one of them slightly under $200. And you see, because it was a Black Friday sale, all ground shipping was free, so no matter how many orders you broke it into, they'd ship it to wherever, in my case, my Miami forwarding service. So then it lands in Miami, and then a couple days later, it ends up at their office in whatever Latin country you're in. And in this case, with the surveillance camera system, each package is under $200, so it doesn't end up in customs, and therefore you pay no taxes or duties, just shipping. Though sometimes that can hit you pretty hard because it's by weight. So, for example, if your box weighs 10 pounds and it costs $5 a pound, that's $50. So, as it turns out, with big outfits like eBay, Sears, Target, Overstock.com, and Amazon, which is the biggest, you'll never get a salesperson or anyone to change the shipping invoice to get it under that $200 or $300 tax-free limit. But with smaller outfits, especially mom-and-pop outfits, all you have to do is get on the phone or chat with one of the salesmen and say, hey, look, I got this $200 customs limit problem. And more often than not, they'll say, why not? Though they may not ever have stretched the rules like that before. Doesn't hurt to ask, and it works, at least some of the time. Think about it. It's no skin off their backs, really. They still get the order and their dough, and that's the point, right? Oh, and if you're thinking that the people at customs or the aduana who are checking those things are really stupid, well, some of them are. They're all corrupt. And of course, you could push the limit and stretch things too far. They just might catch it. For example, if you're sending a camera system through that's worth over $1,000 and it's marked $195 because it's all in one box, they might hold it up and say, give us proof. Send us the original invoice. It looks like it's worth a lot more than that. Well, that's happened to me too. And normally, you just use a little Photoshop sleight of hand, send them the original invoice with a couple of numbers changed. It's all by email and internet. And you know, as long as you've got some official backup paperwork, it normally goes through just fine. Just did that lately with a TV from Amazon. The other part to this little hack is if the thing seems to be really expensive and you want to keep the shipping invoice under $200 or $300, depending on what country you're in, you just tell the outfit you bought it from to mark on the package, sample. Or if it's a lot of items, samples. Because often, and many clothes manufacturers will tell you this, they are sending boxes of samples all the time when they're doing a big run of 5,000, 10,000 jeans, blouses, t-shirts, whatever. They'll first run 10 or 20 samples before they do the whole order. Then they'll send off that box of samples to whatever customer made the order to get their approval to run the rest of that big order. And it seems, and I've seen it happen myself, as long as the invoice is marked sample, you don't get nailed with heavy customs or import fees. It seems like the magic word in this case is sample or samples. And I'll tell you, those Chinese folks at Alibaba know that trick well. In fact, those guys will bend all kinds of rules for you so you don't have to pay taxes or to minimize your import duties. But when you make your order, you have to ask. In fact, that's what I did about a half year ago now when I ordered my portable solar energy system. I ordered it direct from the manufacturer through Alibaba, where I first located the company. Now, in that case, I asked the salesperson, a Chinese guy who I was chatting with. Oh, and the thing is, I know the guy didn't speak English or Spanish. He was using Google Translate. That's what most of these reps on Alibaba do. They'll speak to you in English, do the whole deal in English, but they're using Google Translate or some kind of translator. And they'll do it all through WhatsApp. Why? Because unlike the cost of a regular phone call halfway around the world, WhatsApp is free because it's over the internet and Wi-Fi. Though there is a small percentage of Alibaba salespeople, maybe 5%, who will actually speak to you on WhatsApp instead of just texting back and forth all the time. But look out, their English can be pretty atrocious. So be advised, you might think it's great when some Chinese salesperson or rep says they speak English. But in the end, you just might find that texting is a hell of a lot easier. By the way, that's why Alibaba, which is almost as big as Amazon, you know, it's the Chinese version of Amazon. The weird thing is, it's practically unknown and unheard of here in Latin America. Why? Because all the transactions are done in English, or more precisely, the Google Translate version of Chinese English. But Latinos trying to order in Spanish, forget about it. Fact is, I've had quite a few Latinos ask me how they can get on Alibaba when they see what the deals are like. They're almost always way below Amazon prices for the same products. But naturally, the shipping costs are more because stuff comes directly from China. For many items, it's well worth it. Although, there are a few more hoops to jump through. But remember, China's where everything originates anyway. So when you order from Amazon, they're getting it from China and storing it in their warehouses in the States. So there's middlemen to pay all along the way. And if you know how to order through Alibaba, there are, as mentioned, more hoops to jump through. But, you know, with every order, you actually get to chat or talk to someone, a real person. On Alibaba, you always do that to finalize your order. Unlike Amazon, where you place your order directly and there's no human interaction involved. So anyway, I ordered my portable solar system about a half year ago, direct from the manufacturer in China through Alibaba. That's how I got the contact in the first place. If you've ever visited the Alibaba site, you'll see that it's kind of the general registry for all the manufacturers in China. It's amazing. Alibaba's got every Chinese manufacturer on their site. So anyway, I ordered that portable solar power unit, and they gladly changed the shipping invoice number for me so that the solar panels came in under $200, and there were two 200-watt suitcase panels. The actual price, slightly over $400. So naturally, they would have got stuck in customs, and I'd have to pay 30% duty and all that. And when I told the Chinese salesman in the chat of that little predicament, well, he gladly did what was necessary to make the customer happy. So now some of you are wondering, is that illegal? Can you get in trouble for that? Is that tax evasion? Well, I guess if you're living up in the States and you placed an order like that, the hammer could come down if someone figured it out. But remember, I'm ordering things from China or Amazon. and they end up here in Latin America. And, you know, here in Latin America, where your tax dollar goes for absolutely nothing. Let me ask you this, as expat Eddie always says, is it a crime to steal from a thief? Good question, huh? Now, of course, I'm not advocating you do anything illegal. I'm just telling you what a lot of smart expats end up doing after they've been nailed a few dozen times with some really high import taxes. And truthfully, the worst that could happen if you have someone mark down the shipping receipt and it doesn't really reflect what you paid for it. Well, your shipment will be delayed a bit, and the aduana, the customs guys, will assign a value to it, and you'll end up paying some taxes. So has that ever happened to me or anyone else I know that's pulled a hack like that? Absolutely not. At least up to now, I've never ever heard of a case where customs have questioned the value of something and assigned a higher price. That can only really happen if you don't have an official-looking receipt or you're bringing a car in, and you've somehow doctored the invoice down to a ridiculously low number because cars are such big items to import, and governments can extort so much taxes when you bring one through. Well, they, just like you, have access to the present-day Blue Book value of any car. So if you drive or ship a car through and it's worth $10,000 and you've got an invoice that says $4,000 or $3,000, the customs guys won't buy that. But you're not going to get in trouble. They're not going to criminally charge you. They're just going to make you pay the tax. There's no way you'll ever end up in court. They just want their money. That's why, especially at the Mexican-U.S. border, there's an awful lot of bribery going down when people bring cars through. It used to be, though, I don't know if it's happening much like this anymore. When you'd bring a car from the States through to Mexico, if it was worth in the Blue Book, let's say $20,000, and you had a receipt from a car dealer or auction that said $5,000 or $10,000, there very well could be a little bit of a Mexican standoff when you're dealing with customs. Often, nothing that $100 under the table couldn't solve, if you know what I mean. I've seen that kind of stuff go down many times, especially at land border stops. Those immigration and customs guys are eminently bribable. Especially when you're trying to bring boxes full of stuff through a border, you don't have receipts, and the customs guys are trying to establish a value. Depends how busy or how neglected the border stop is, too, and how close it is to Easter or Christmas. Because, you know, that's vacation time, and everyone's short of dough. And those border cops, they need to buy presents for their kids and stuff. And sometimes they'll come right out and tell you that. It's happened to me more than once. Which brings us to this email from Frank, a longtime listener who's living in Antigua, Guatemala. In fact, I think he's been living there now 5 or 6 years. He says, Johnny, I've got a package of vitamins from Vitacost.com that I ordered through a shipper that I've used once or twice before. That would be a Miami-based shipper where they forward the goods. It's called QuickBoxUSA.com. So I used them a few times with no problems. Suddenly, now they're telling me that because the package is marked medicine, I have to have it broken into two separate packages with an added fee to sidestep import regulations about the amount of medicine that I can bring in at one time. Then Frank says, according to a certain fake book expat group, all of that may be true. I don't really know. Right now I've sent a reply to the email company at QuickBox asking why the sudden change. And I sent them an email copy for the second time of the package inventory to show that it's all vitamins and no medicine. I asked my lawyer about that. He said he doesn't really know what's happening there. But he did say that if you're a pensionado resident and are registered that way with the government tax office in Guatemala, SAT it's called, they will sometimes waive the annual package and weight restrictions because people under the pensionado status have special dispensations. So anyway, Johnny, just need your opinion on that, please. All right, Frank, I think I have some news on that front. News that every expat gonna be wannabe and people with a plan B should know. If, for example, you're ordering anything through Amazon, I'm mentioning Amazon again. Why? Because it's number one with Latinos for buying things online and having them shipped through these Miami freight forwarders. Turns out, when an Amazon box comes through, it's marked all over the place Amazon, right? And Amazon Prime and all that. It really doesn't matter what you've got inside an Amazon box, it gets preferential treatment. As long as it's not an apparatus that's loaded with lithium batteries or some kind of chemical they deem hazardous, like cleaning fluids or degreasers, paints, certain toxic liquid cleaning products. And even if it is a restricted product, it'll get through. Might take another week or so, and you might have to pay a $5 surcharge. That's happened to me. But no big deal. Seems like if it's in an Amazon box, it almost always gets through A-OK without ever hitting the aduana. Unless, of course, again, it's over the $200 or $300 limit. And even then, your Miami mail forwarding service will take care of the charges, and when you pick it up, you just have to reimburse them. And another thing, Frank's right. If it's vitamins or supplements, there are supposed to be no restrictions, meaning supposedly there's no limit to the amount of stuff you can order off Amazon, eBay, or whatever, and have it shipped through your Miami mailbox and brought into your country. However, it seems in Frank's case, he somehow got nicked. What he's saying is the aduana thought it was prescription medicine, which prompted the email. Now, when it comes to prescription medicine, sometimes it will get stuck in the aduana, that's the customs office, and you'll have to go down there yourself with the prescription to get it released. Although I only know of one person that's ever happened to, besides yours truly, me. Anyway, from what Frank says, I'm assuming Frank's Miami mail service, that's QuickBoxUSA.com, has figured a workaround by breaking up the order into two separate packages. Though it does seem strange. But bottom line, Frank, it shouldn't have happened, because vitamins and supplements aren't supposed to get held up. Funny thing, Frank, I've ordered from Vitacost through Amazon and never had that trouble at all. Then again, as mentioned, if you order products through Amazon, it comes in Amazon boxes, and that stuff almost always sidesteps customs as long as it's under $200 or $300. By the way, here's a hack that some people use concerning prescription medicines. They have the mail order pharmacy send the product to someone in the States, mother, brother, sister. Then they stick it in a little Amazon box, seal it up and send it to the mail forwarder in Miami. Isn't that sneaky? And the people I know who do this, none of them is reported ever being snagged in customs. However, if you use one of those online pharmacies and are actually getting prescription medicines, they'll send it to your Miami box, except the bill of lading, the shipping order, will say prescription medicine or it'll have the name of the drug on it. And ironically enough, even though you can get all that stuff in your Latin American country without a prescription at any drugstore, that same prescription medicine, if you buy it from an online pharmacy, could get held up in customs. It's happened to me. Now, I know what you're thinking. If you could buy that stuff all day long in Latin America without a prescription, why get it online? Well, down here, if it's a generic medicine, it's super cheap. But if it's proprietary and you have to buy the name brand, it's going to be expensive because it's got to be imported from the first world. Oddly enough, it seems proprietary medicines are always a lot cheaper online. All right, how about a boots on the ground example? Here's what happened to me. A while back, I got caught up in a little catch-22 myself. Now, I'm not on any regular prescription medication. However, I take the occasional sumatriptan tablet for migraine headaches. I get a migraine every week or two, so I take a sumatriptan tab about every week or two. And normally, just one will work like a charm. Now, the proprietary name for that stuff is Imitrix, and it's very expensive, something like $20 a pill. But they've got online pharmacies in Canada, India, United Kingdom, Australia, and other places that sell that stuff as a generic for $1 to $2 a pill. Now, down here in Latin America, there's almost zero demand for that drug, sumatriptan. So the pharmacies don't carry the generics, only the proprietary Imitrix. So once, not long ago, I ordered a big quantity of that stuff online. Enough, I figured, to last me years, something like 200 pills. And wouldn't you know it, they got stuck in Guatemala customs because they were a medicine. Yep, I shipped it through my Miami mailbox. I got an email from them saying I had to go down to custom and show my prescription, which is a big pain in the ass. You got to go down to the big city, to the traffic-snarled, overly congested government district. It takes about 4 hours to do anything when you go through a government building. You join the sweaty masses, take a number, you wait and you wait, and I finally got the stuff. But I wouldn't have got it if I didn't have a prescription. So then how could I have avoided all that? Glad you asked that question. Well, if I would have had that stuff shipped to, let's say, my mother's place in Chicago and she stuck it in a tiny Amazon box, remove the packing slip, description, information, etc., maybe throw in a couple of cookies and a pound cake, as mothers like to do, I doubt there'd have been any problems at all. And even if my mail forwarding service would have called and said, hey, we need an invoice on this, well, guess what? It's Photoshop to the rescue. Now, if all this sounds underhanded and sneaky, this is Latin America, you know, where practically all government officials, including the cops, are on the take, or are at least willing to forgive and forget and look the other way, for what you might call a tip, a gratuity. Really, chicken feed. Driveway chicken feed. And unfortunately, or fortunately, that's the system down here. You can buck it, but you won't get very far. You have to kind of play along. And truthfully, there isn't a single business here in Latin America, or individual for that matter, who isn't doing some kind of sleight of hand to avoid paying taxes or minimizing them to some ridiculously low level. And the fact is, everyone knows you get absolutely nothing for your tax dollar here. Though some people might say, look at the infrastructure, at least they built roads and bridges and such. Even if they've done a horse job, someone's building them with tax dollars, right? Well, not so fast, especially when you consider, just like up in the States and Europe, they've got a hefty fuel tax at the pump. And I mean hefty because gas and diesel prices are higher here than they are in the first world. That means, in many cases, you're paying more for tax when you buy a gallon than you do for the value of the gas itself. You know, when you look back at the statutes in the States when gas taxes were first imposed, you'll see the whole idea was for that money to be specifically used for infrastructure projects and road maintenance. Another big government lie. It's all talk. Those taxes go into the general fund and are not earmarked for infrastructure projects, nor is that the case in Latin America. So believe it or not, down here in Latin America, everyone is getting over on the government somehow because they know it's so utterly corrupt and useless. By the way, that's why all Latin countries have a VAT tax. They call it IVA, E-V-A. It's that value-added tax that you pay for every time you buy a product. Unless, of course, you're buying it for cash on the street from one of the millions of little vendors who's selling stuff off the books. Yep, you gotta love that about Latin America, where you've got probably a third of all people working off the books because they just can't stand paying even a nickel of their income to the government. But when you're buying stuff in a legitimate store, restaurant, or any place that hands out those receipts called facturas, you're paying that IVA included in the bill whether you know it or not. That's that extra 10 to 24%, depending on the country, that each business who gives out those receipts or facturas has to turn over to the government every month. And the reason why that IVA exists is because everyone cheats on their income taxes, and that, the IVA and the fuel taxes, are the two main ways government funds its pathetic, malignant, crooked self. Besides the fact that Latinos hardly pay any income tax at all, their property taxes are ridiculously low. You gotta love that. For example, on a house that's worth, let's say, $300,000 in the States, you'll pay probably around $100 a year property tax. So governments make big money from the IVA, the value-added tax, the gas tax, and through gigantic IMF and World Bank loans that they can never possibly pay back. Which is why countries like Argentina, Ecuador, Mexico, and others routinely become insolvent and go bankrupt every 10 years or so. Then they default on their debts, create a brand new kind of funny money with a new set of smiling, sociopathic, genocidal dictators on it. Then with the new corrupt government promising to be good little payers if they just get another huge IMF loan. China comes in, buys up all the mining rights. Then they have a big international meeting, a photo op. They suck up to the U.S. and they're off to the races again. Which brings us to another pertinent email. This time it's from Mark. He says, "Hi, Johnny. I'm a lifelong North Sider from Chicago." Hey, I've been there. "Thanks so much for your podcast," he says. "You restarted my dreams. I was thinking of starting to move my money to a bank that does business in both Chicago and Guatemala, believe it or not. Then," he says, "I can change my dollars to a strictly local bank when I get down there. I'm about 2 years away from doing all that and getting my plan B done." Then he says, "I'll be coming down to your later seminar in 2020. He's talking about the one coming up this July. That is, if the world doesn't implode financially or otherwise by then. By the way, if you've noticed, all the seminars I've done for the past 9 years have been in July and January. Anyway," he says, "Johnny, have any ideas for me about banks?" Well, Mark, I think you're not a long-time listener, right? Or you would have heard me say many times that it's a great idea, in fact, mandatory, to have a bank in Latin America. But it's a terrible idea to have a bank in Latin America that has a branch up in the U.S., even though at first thought it sounds mighty convenient. For example, down here you'll find that corrupt, bloated giant Citibank. You'll find Scotiabank, Bank of America, lots of U.S. banks. So at first you're thinking, hey, I have an account with Citibank, I'll just open an account down there. And it'll be so easy to just move money back and forth at will. But let me tell you, that's a very, very bad idea. The idea is that the bank you select in your Latin country is a good, strong bank that's been around at least 40 or 50 years, so you know it's stable and solid. By the way, it should be your Latin lawyer that tells you which bank to use because he knows the most solid ones and the ones that seem to be solid but aren't. Just because a bank's got lots of ads and TV commercials doesn't mean it's solid. That's why you need your local Latin lawyer to fill you in on these things. You don't want to trust the gringos in the local expat bar to give you banking advice. Though so many fresh green gringos will do that. I've seen it for myself. But I digress, though not much. Anyway, Mark, the big reason why you should never get a Latin bank that has a branch in your town or even in the U.S. at all is because all the U.S. State Treasury Department or IRS has to do is make a phone call to, let's say, Citibank, who you've got an account with in Chicago and Guatemala. And with one phone call, not even a court order, they could lock up your account and make it impossible for you to move money in and out till the end of time. But that won't happen to you, right? Well, let's say you get divorced. Right away, the first thing your soon-to-be ex-wife's lawyer is going to do is going to lock down the Citibank account, which includes the one in Guatemala. However, if you had dough in a bank in Guatemala that was not connected to or had a branch anywhere in the U.S., they cannot touch your dough. It's nearly impossible because to do so, a lawyer or team of lawyers would have to come down to your Latin country from the States, get a court date down in your Latin country, and all this will have to be done in Spanish, of course. They'll have to present their case, the reason why they want to lock up your account. And guess what? By the time they get that all together and all the dough they'll have spent, surely tens of thousands of dollars on trips and lawyers and hours billed, not to mention the court systems here in Latin America, work on triple mañana time, so a case like that might not even get heard for a year or two. The fact is, if you talk to any Latin lawyer, ask him if he's ever heard of a case where a gringo's Latin bank account has been locked up or frozen, or what they call embargoed, after there's been some kind of U.S. court order or request. You'll find there's probably not a single Latino lawyer who knows of any action like that being successful. In fact, people ask my expat insider seminar lawyer that same question all the time, and he says he's never heard of that ever happening in Guatemala or with any of his other lawyer friends throughout other Latin American countries. It just doesn't happen that way. Unless you've got an account at a bank that's got a branch up in the U.S. All right, speaking of my upcoming seminar, which kicks off just about a month from now on January 10th, there's still time to get on board. Just go to www.theexpatfiles.com and click on the seminar link, or go to www.theexpatfiles.com/seminar. And remember, you can kill two birds with one stone. That is, come to the seminar and apply for your Guatemalan residency at the same time. Just check out the seminar sign-up information, and you'll see the details on how to arrange with our seminar lawyer to apply for your residency at the same time. South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.